You know her from network radio, but now she's on the net and in your head.
Don't believe me, just watch.
This is the Fabulous Sports Babe on RadioInfluence.com.
Hey, it's me, the Fabulous Sports Babe. It's the Babe Cast. That's exactly what's going on. We are very busy. Very busy. I have many things to tell you, but I'll have to tell you about football much later. I got to do this. Howard Balzer's going to join us. Howard Balzer's been in everything in the whole wide world, from ESPN to Pro Football Weekly. He's been with the Sporting News. He's been everywhere in the whole wide world, and he does a show right now in St. Louis. As in St. Louis, Missouri, we lost the Rams, and that's exactly what we're doing. Howard, get over here. We've got some serious things to talk about. I'm sitting in Florida, but I know people who lived in St. Louis, and a friend of mine who's, you know, I've known for a little while, said, I thought they were going back to St. Louis for a few, going back to Los Angeles. You're from St. Louis. You've been there for a long time. What the hell happened over here, Howard?
Boy, oh boy, I'll tell you, I really needed probably a couple of hours, and a lot of people, babe, have told me that I should probably write a book about all of the levels and the things that went on. But in a nutshell, basically what happened is that Stan Kroenke, the owner of the Rams, was able to take advantage of a horrendous lease that was negotiated with the, you know, the negotiators for St. Louis when they attracted the Rams to come to St. Louis back in 1995, and that gave them an out to get out of the lease if the city wouldn't spend what the Rams felt they should to make the Edward Jones Dome a first-tier facility. And first-tier means in the top 25% of the league. And so when Stan Kroenke became the sole owner of the team 6 years ago, I believe at that moment the wheels were put in motion for the team to leave. He was on the L.A. Stadium Committee at the time, and that was his goal all along. And so there was an arbitration to figure out what it would cost in the first tier to get it up. And it was $750 million that the team didn't have to put in $1, and they didn't have to extend the lease. So you would have been spending $750 million for another 10 years on the lease. No city could do that. Mm-hmm. And by not doing it, it gave the Rams the ability to go year to year on their lease starting last year in 2015. So the wheels were put in motion. He got Inglewood going. Never worked for 1 minute with the people of St. Louis. When I say the people, I mean the community leaders and all that, to try to come up with a solution. He wanted to get to Los Angeles, and that's exactly what happened.
You know, and it seems that when they sold it to him in 2010, because I know that the Rosenblums were doing it, but I guess it was Chris. He gave him the last of the whatever it was to run the Rams. I mean, were you surprised when he did that, or you were just glad somebody was there? They were keeping the Rams. It was going to be all right, and then it became crazy in the next 5 years.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was Shad Khan, who's now the owner of the Jaguars, when, as you mentioned, Chip Rosenblum and his sister, Lucia Rodriguez, the children of George Frontieri, who passed away in January of 2008, they wanted to sell their 60%. And Shad Khan came in to buy it. But Stan Kroenke owned 40%, and he had a right of first refusal for anybody that would come in and try to buy the team at whatever point it would go up for sale. Mm-hmm. And so it was pretty much a fait accompli what Kroenke was going to do, even though there were those who believed that Khan would come in and he would be the majority owner. Obviously, Kroenke was never going to do that. He allowed Khan to set the price for that 60%, and then he matched it. And the real thing that smells about it, Dave, and was kind of slimy, is that Stan Kroenke, when he took over as the owner in April of 2010, said, I'll do my damnedest to keep this team in St. Louis. I led the charge. Because there were rumors already back then that he had his eye on L.A. I led the charge to bring the team here. Why would I lead the charge away from St. Louis? I was born in Missouri. I love the people of St. Louis and Missouri. And so all the things that were said along the way is what really have turned a lot of people off, not only on him, but the NFL. Because a year ago, when Kroenke announced his plans for this Inglewood project, St. Louis Stadium Task Force, encouraged by the NFL, tried to put a stadium deal together. And they did unbelievable work in 1 year to put a stadium deal together. And yet when it came down, when push came to shove, the NFL said, oh, it's not good enough. It's going to be $400 million of public money, which the NFL just basically said, too bad. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing that turns people off to from a league level about they were St. Louis was encouraged and encouraged and encouraged, but then everyone feels they were just going to find something wrong with it because the Rams didn't want the deal. They didn't want a stadium deal. So that's what made it very difficult to live up to whatever expectations there were from the NFL, who was really negotiating on behalf of the Rams, in a sense, through the whole stadium process in St. Louis.
But, Howard, one of the things that we know about L.A. is they come in the third inning and they leave in the seventh inning if you're playing baseball or something. You know, and so one of the things, they got out of there, they were gone 20 years that they've been there, and then they just became more and more in love with L.A. and the thought of somebody going to L.A. And it seemed like when anybody needed a new stadium, everybody was saying in the last 10 years, we can go to L.A., we can go to L.A., whereas before they weren't holding it to it. And now it's funny because Kroenke has this thing, and for people who don't know, it took me a long time, but this guy's got more money than you can even believe. And he owns everybody, and it, you know, he owns the Nuggets and everything else, but he got this, and now he knows he can go right back to L.A. And one of the things that was interesting is that he just said, I'm going to build this whether you like it or not, and that's it. And now other people are saying they're going to do that. But and the thing is, they just left. It wasn't like we're leaving in 2 years. They're gone.
Right. No, well, that was, in some ways, that's better. You wouldn't want them saying, hey, we're moving, but we're going to stay here for a couple of years until the stadium is ready. So, in a way, that's good. But you're right. I've made the comment, Dave, that, you know, in this the year that the NFL is celebrating the golden anniversary of the Super Bowl, they just picked the team that had the most gold and then the owner that had the most gold.
Yeah.
And they fell in love with this project, which most of the project isn't about football. I mean, I laugh when Peter King wrote something on his website, quoted one owner as saying, hey, we might have the Oscars there someday because there's going to be a theater on the whole project. And I'm saying, well, so what? I mean, what does that have to do with football? But the other thing about this, too, is while they threw St. Louis under the bus, they also threw Dean Spanos, the owner of the Chargers, who didn't want to work with Kroenke, because Kroenke stabbed him on the back. It was actually Dean Spanos that approached Kroenke early in 2013 and said, hey, let's talk about this together, mm-hmm. and both of us going to Inglewood. That would be a great spot at Hollywood Park for a stadium. And Kroenke had a meeting with him, and then after they met, he never called him back and then started working on it on his own. So they forced Dean Spanos into a position to crawl on his hands and knees to try to make a good deal with him. And Mark Davis, that's another whole entire story, what'll happen with the Raiders. So it's just a bizarre process, the way it all went along. And I'll tell you, like, I use the word slimy, and in a lot of ways, it really is, because the NFL and the league really showed its true colors in this entire situation.
Howard, do you think that the Raiders are going to end up in St. Louis?
I don't believe so. I think it should be something that Mark Davis should consider. But he has said on several occasions that he has no interest in St. Louis. Some just said, well, maybe he thought he's just saying that because he wants to protect what he has in Oakland. But he told me one-on-one back in August that when I told him, hey, you should consider St. Louis. And he said he likes San Antonio more. He said, I think that fits the Raiders' persona more. Now, of course, we have the thought that if the Chargers go to L.A., that the Raiders will go to San Diego. And they'll still be in San Francisco, which would be quite odd. That San Diego could never come up with a deal, a stadium deal, to keep the Chargers. Mm-hmm. But now would they come up with one to keep the Raiders? So while I think it would be a pretty good move for him, he does seem dead set against it. That doesn't mean he couldn't change his mind at some point. But at least from everything he said, it does not appear to be an option.
When you're writing or you're doing, you know, your talk show, what is it like for them to know that their football team is gone? Tell me about it.
It's really empty. And someone did ask me, you know, has it sunk in yet? and it probably has a it sinks in every time you hear Los Angeles Rams and all that. It'll probably truly sink in when we get to the combine and everyone's starts talking about the draft, and everyone in St. Louis will be we're not talking about the Rams as it goes to the draft. Right. When free agency starts, when the draft comes along, that's when it'll truly sink in. But, you know, of course, St. Louis has experienced this before when they lost the Cardinals, when they moved to Arizona back in 1988, and then lost an expansion team. It just seems that this city is kind of, I don't know what the word is, cursed or something. I mean, look at it this way. Here's a real irony. I said this on my radio, on my local show. I said, in 49 years of professional football, the owners that St. Louis has experienced are Bill Bidwell, Giorgio Frontieri, and Stan Kroenke. And isn't it amazing that Giorgio was the best?
Yeah. Now that you say it, I guess it is true. It's funny because I look at it and I go, well, did the hockey team or the baseball team go, oh, that's glad? I certainly don't think that the St. Louis Cardinals would ever feel that way at all. And I don't think that the other people feel that way. I mean, would you say, oh, they're coming more to me because they're not going to the football game?
I don't know how the Cardinals can get many more people than they do.
Yeah.
You know, I think the Blues maybe could benefit a little bit. I don't think it would be significant. They draw well. I mean, they're a very well-supported team. And that was one of the things about this process, too, that turned a lot of people off. Because when the Rams filed their application to relocate, they felt they had to trash St. Louis and say all these things, some that were lies, some were distortions. But, I mean, they said, well, you know, St. Louis can't support three teams. And they said this and they said that. And they said, and that, you know, more people there support the Cardinals than support the Rams. Well, of course they do. The Cardinals are in the postseason every year. They're always good. Mm-hmm. They have an ownership that is engaged in the community. And the Rams, over the last 10 years, have had a horrible record. When Stan Kroenke took over the team, he has spoke to the media once in 4 years. And that was at the press conference to introduce Jeff Fisher as the head coach. He never has spoken to the media. He's not seen in town. He doesn't engage with season ticket holders or suite holders or anything like that. And so that's why the Cardinals are number one and why the Blues are well supported, because their owner is a St. Louisan, a guy by the name of Tom Stilton. And the amazing thing was, I think it was Thursday, when the vote came down on a Tuesday, Thursday night, the Blues had a home game, and they honored the owner of the Blues, or I don't know if honored, they recognized the owner of the Blues and the owner of the Cardinals, Bill DeWitt, who each came out wearing a jacket from the other team. Stillman was wearing a Cardinals jacket. DeWitt was wearing a Blues jacket as kind of a show of solidarity, which prompted the 19,000 people in Scott Trade Center to start the famous Kroenke Sucks chant. And so, you know, so they... That you know, it's more than just being a business, I believe, when you're owning a team. And so right now, really one of the big feelings in St. Louis is they're sad not to have football. They're sad not to have the Rams. But no one is sad not to have Stan Kroenke as an owner of this team anymore.
But if we sit here and we go, would St. Louis still want an NFL team?
Oh, they definitely would. There's no question about it. But I'll tell you one thing, the mayor came out, Mayor Francis Slay came out a day or two later and said, hey, we're not going to chase an NFL team. And a lot of people took that to mean, oh, we don't care. No, that's not what he was saying. He doesn't support St. Louis now being the next Los Angeles. Not saying that St. Louis is Los Angeles. Please, people don't, you know, take what I'm saying wrong.
Right, right.
But being the next team or the next city the teams threaten to go to try to get what they want from their own town. And you don't want to be used and abused like that, because, hey, that's what got us into trouble with that first-tier clause in the first place, because didn't get an expansion team, and then they were just desperate to get a team in the dome that was being built, and so they basically agreed to whatever, almost whatever, anything the Rams wanted. So they just don't want to be used and abused, have another city say, oh, yeah, we'll go to St. Louis. Hey, we'll go there. And then they get what they want and say, oh, sorry, you know, thanks for nothing. And so St. Louis doesn't want that. If Mark Davis would call up and say, hey, we want to come there, let's talk stadium, and we definitely committed to coming. If we can work out a deal for the stadium, we'd welcome them with open arms.
You know, while I'm thinking about this, Howard, the thing that came in my mind was that they're going to sell the Titans. Would that be something that they would be interested in going to St. Louis? And then after I thought about that, is the stadium good or bad, that stadium there? Is it being good or not, that stadium? Because some people say sometimes it's hard to broadcast, sometimes it's not a good stadium, then some people look at it differently.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of become obsolete, the Dome, and especially when you consider how many new stadiums have gone up. And I'll be the first to admit, that stadium was built on the cheap, and I think that was one of the reasons the Rams were wanting certain things. And they didn't necessarily at the beginning want to invoke that first-tier clause, which, by the way, they could have invoked after the first 10 years, but gave St. Louis a pass, and they spent $30 million, you know, to upgrade the scoreboard and things like that. But that was just window dressing. And so the Dome is okay, but there's not any ambient light like you see in Ford Field and some other domes. It was just done very quickly to try to get an expansion team. So it definitely needed upgrades. The new stadium was going to be over $1.1 billion. Some said, well, you should have put a roof on it, a retractable roof. Well, they had a hard enough time raising the $400 million. A retractable roof would have added another $250-300 million to it. If you had the owner of the team that was interested in being there, that could have been done. And so I think a new stadium probably is necessary, or a huge renovation. Either way, that's going to cost an awful lot of money, and that's the reality of it. And so it's the dawn of new stadiums in the NFL. Since that Dome was built, I believe the number is 23 new stadiums or significantly renovated stadiums have been done in the NFL. That's a huge number when you consider there's only 32 teams in the league.
You know what I thought of too, and it doesn't sound anything like the Fabulous Sports Babe. I would never say this, but I say it now. What about the people that have jobs there? You know, before I would have said, hell with all of them. But, you know, now I'm thinking, what about the people that's where they've been for a long time, and then all of a sudden they just leave and that's it?
It's tough for everybody, even the part-timers that work on day of games, the restaurants downtown. But I'll tell you, one thing I've heard from the people who actually work for the organization, Stan Kroenke's being cold with them as well. From what I've been told, they're taking very few people with them. Most have been told, you're going to get paid till April 1st, and that's it. And they're going to start almost from scratch in Los Angeles in terms of the organizational people that will work there in marketing and things like that. They're not giving even those people an opportunity even to go there. And certainly a lot of them probably would say, I don't know if I want to go there. I mean, the cost of living we know is tremendous. Yeah. And I'm sure Stan Kroenke wouldn't just automatically give everybody, you know, 150% cost of living increases to move there. So, you know, bottom line is he's a cold, ruthless businessman. And that's exactly the way he handled this entire situation.
So I have to say, are you going to the Super Bowl?
Oh, I will be there.
You have
Certainly,
to be.
I'll be there.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, I vote on the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and this will be my 36th Super Bowl. I'll continue covering. You know, I had a decision to make. Like I said earlier, it'll be weird to do all this in a town that doesn't have the NFL. So for now, I'm here. Who knows? I might be looking for some other places to go at this point. And my wife said to me, well, if we go somewhere, it's got to be warm. And so I said, hey, I'm with you on that.
Hey, let me ask you about the Hall of Fame, because you're going to be doing that. The people that are up there for it, it's funny because, you know, a lot of these people in the last few years are guys that we all saw. You know, it used to be, oh, I heard about him and all that. And now they're guys that we saw. And I thought, oh, dear, you know, that we know these guys.
Yeah, it's a very strong class. It is every year with the 15 finalists. And I'll tell you, it's one of the more humbling things that I do, not only each year, it goes on all year, really, as you prepare for it. But it's the most humbling thing that I do, knowing how this affects people and how it changes their lives when they get in. knowing also that there's some controversy because whatever five we put in from the modern era candidates, there's going to be a lot of people saying, well, boy, how come this guy didn't get in? How come that guy didn't get in? Well, the reality is 10 of them can't. You know, 10 of those names on this list will not be getting that knock on the door from Dave Baker, the executive or the president of the Pro Football Hall of Fame that day when we vote, the day before the Super Bowl. And so it's, you know, everyone is deserving. That's why they get this far. And why most of them, you know, I think there's four or five guys who are finalists for the first time, including three first-time eligibles like Brett Favre, Terrell Owens, and Alan Faneca. Mm-hmm. And then the other guys have been discussed before, two times, three times. You know, Kevin Green, this will be the fifth time that he's a finalist. And so it's a long day when we discuss all these guys and then we vote our conscience and decide who goes in. But I can say this. I know I'm one of 46, and we all take it incredibly seriously and don't do it without real serious thought and trying to pick the best class possible. And that's what we'll be doing on February 6th in San Francisco.
You know what? I wonder when you do that, how much of it has to do with the rings on the finger? How much is that?
It's a part of it. I think it's gone away somewhat from that. Mm-hmm. There was a time where it seemed almost mandatory that you had to have those rings. Then little by little it started being seen, hey, there's a lot of great players, a lot of great coaches that didn't win a ring or didn't win multiple rings. And it changed, you know, when Bud Grant went in from the Vikings, they were there four times, didn't win. Marv Levy, obviously, and all those Bills players that were there 4 years in a row and didn't win. But everyone started to realize how hard it was just to do that and what great players those guys were, Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas, you know, Andre Reed, and so Bruce Smith, of course. And so I it is part of the discussion, but I think that it's not looked at as the be-all and the end-all. Mm-hmm. Maybe that separates one guy from another, but, I think Brett Favre, obviously, is a slam dunk. I don't say that about a lot of guys. None of us on the committee do. He's a slam dunk. Yeah, in all those years and all the great things he did, he has one ring. And so, to me, the ring is a team thing. The teams win Super Bowls, not individual players.
Right.
And certainly quarterbacks are looked at a little bit differently. And now we know for the next 2 weeks we're going to be treated to, once again, more talk. Well, does Peyton Manning, do they have to win the Super Bowl to cement his legacy? His legacy is written, whatever happens in that game, whether he wins or not, at least in my opinion. I think a lot of people, you know, feel that same way. So, you know, Kevin Green didn't get there. Some of the other guys didn't. But I don't think that is a swaying part of most of it when we get in there and talk about all of these great players.
You know, Howard, I'll let you go, but did you see Concussion?
Yes, I did.
And what did you think about what we saw there? I mean, I remember going to see it and then I let it roll around for a couple of days. But, you know, when you saw people like Mike Webster and you see people that you knew in that was kind of weird. I mean, you know, it was made from these people that we knew. We knew what happened to Webster. We knew what happened to some of those guys. And you know, the Junior Seau thing, I was talking to somebody one day and I said, you know, I only talked to him six times, but he couldn't have been nicer to me, you know? And it was just like, I was talking to David Chow, who happens to be the doctor there. I was there for like 17 years with the Chargers. And I thought to myself, you know, I only talked to him six times. He was great to me, but what was it like because it's one thing when you know it, but now it's really coming to happen now. And now you wonder, are we going to see football in 20 years?
That's, you know, a lot of people have that question. I don't know if that's over dramatized. What we'll have to wait and see. I don't know. You know, who knows? But I do think that the saddest thing about the movie to me, and we all knew the story for the most part, And I don't believe that the NFL truly knew, and mm-hmm. players certainly didn't know what the long-term effects would be of getting a concussion. I don't believe they knew that. But when they were faced with this potential evidence of what could very well happen mm-hmm. to players, they didn't want to hear it. They tried to debunk it. You know, they tried to you know, consider Dr. Bennett Omalu almost a quack, that you don't know what you're talking about. And the reality is, babe, there's been thousands and thousands of players that have played this game, and still a relatively small percentage really have these horrible things that happen to them. But it's hard to believe that, it's hard to accept that obviously football played a big role in that, and that the NFL tried to walk away from it and debunk it is kind of scary in a lot of ways. But, you know, I've thought of this a lot, babe, about how Roger Goodell always talks about protecting the shield. Mm-hmm. Well, if they were really protecting the shield, that's not the way they would have approached this issue. What they're protecting is the green part of the shield. Mm-hmm. And that's what they want to protect. And that's what this move to LA is about. It's all about money. And obviously it's big business. But if you're going to really speak about player safety and all those things, and they are trying to do things, but if you really believe in that, then you've got to pull out all stops to be as safe as you can and to take care of the players as best you can. And like I said, the fact that, you know, they tried to discredit this doctor, I think is just a sad commentary on what the NFL was at that time. And it's not that long ago.
Howard, I love talking with you. I'm so glad we had this conversation. You gave me everything that was going on, and I do appreciate it. Howard, thank you so much for being with me.
You know I love talking to you, babe. Anytime, just give me a call, and I'll be happy to do it anytime and talk football with you.
Hey, how much do we love Howard, and how aggravated are they with the St. Louis Rams, now to be called the L.A. Rams? Good information on that one from Howard. We do appreciate that. You know, my favorite thing in the whole wide world is coming up, and you're going to go, it's 17 hours of watching the Super Bowl. Hell no. Do you know what starts at 3 p.m.? Forget what that 17 hours of, like, okay, I got this for Dallas, isn't it wonderful? Excuse me, for Denver. And Cam Newton's just the greatest thing in the whole wide world. All right, I got it. But the best thing in the whole wide world comes on at 3 o'clock, and it's called the Puppy Bowl. And if you don't know about the Puppy Bowl, where have you been? Because not only can you see it from like 3 to 5, they play it again right after it. You've got the Kitty Halftime Show. We got all kinds of things. Dan Schechner's coming on now. The Puppy Bowl is coming. Yay! Danny, I'm so excited. The Puppy Bowl is back, and I'm very excited, and you are too.
Oh yeah, this is like Christmas for me. This is my time of year where I get amped.
Now, tell me about this. Tell me now, because everybody's going to get all excited and go, I want those puppies, but the puppies have already found homes, right?
You know, people get so excited about the Puppy Bowl, even as we shoot it, that they start adopting puppies right then and there. So our initial purpose with the Puppy Bowl was to promote animal adoption and get these puppies adopted. But what happens is people come to the actual taping in New York day of, and they just want to adopt a Puppy Bowl puppy. And there still are, I think, a couple left. If you go to the Animal Planet website, you'll find some, but they go quickly.
You know, one of the things about that, because first of all, how big are the puppies? Tell us how big they are and all that.
Yeah, they're between 12 and 24 weeks. So that's our requirement. They have to be true puppies to be in Puppy Bowl. And we do shoot it in October. So by the time this airs on February, this airs February 7th at 3 o'clock on Animal Planet, by the time it airs, these puppies have already become sort of teenagers in the puppy world.
you know?
But what we tell everybody is that, if you can't find the puppy you fall in love with when you watch Puppy Bowl, go to that website of that shelter, and you'll find equally adorable puppies.
Let me tell you about, how long have you been doing this now?
This is my fifth year, but I've been working with Animal Planet for 7, so I've been in the animal world for a long time.
You know, tell me more about this, because I really got turned on to it a number of years ago, and I kept telling people the Puppy Bowl, and they didn't know what I was talking about, so I immediately was crazy about it. I said, you have to see this one way or the other.
Yeah, you know, me too. You know, it's interesting. The Puppy Bowl's been growing. It's our 12th year now. Every year it gets a little bit more popular. More and more people, I find, are aware of it. And some people, the hardcore football fans, human football fans, won't admit that they watch Puppy Bowl. But, you know, often they'll do it on the sly, you know, on the side. They'll go, you know what, I do tune in during the commercial breaks, or I tune in at halftime or something like that. Because, you know, the Super Bowl is our big competition. The big game is our big competition. So we're always trying to, you know, give people a nice alternative. And it's puppies playing football, and it's, and it goes on all day long on Animal Planet. It's like a big, big party. And this year, God, this year we had 20 kittens, 80 puppies. They're all from shelters across the country, all available for adoption. As you said, some of them are already, most of them have already been adopted, but plenty are connected to shelters that still need you to come in and adopt their puppies.
You know,
so
what
we encourage everyone to watch.
You know what I was thinking, Dan, when you're doing this, I had said earlier, listen, you know, if you're going to do 17 hours of the stupid Super Bowl, start at 3 o'clock. Now, is it just on Animal Planet? Is it also in other Discovery networks, or what else is there?
Great question. It is only on Animal Planet, beginning at 3 and then going on for 12 hours. But if for some reason you can't get to a TV, yes, 12 hours. And what's kind of cool about it is people go, well, it's the same show, you're repeating it. It's not, actually. We change the endings. We record various different endings because the ending, of course, shows which team wins, Team Rough or Team Fluff, because we've divided into teams, and it reveals our MVP, our most valuable puppy. We actually, when we record the Puppy Bowl, we record various endings. So each airing of the Puppy Bowl at every two-hour interval is completely different from the one before it. That's what's so exciting. Additionally, if you miss it on Animal Planet or can't get to a TV for some reason, you just go to animalplanet.com online. You can watch clips, highlights, packages. There's a whole pregame, believe it or not. There's a postgame. There's so much going on. A lot of great opportunities and options. Oh, there's a locker room cam. There's a virtual reality aspect to it this year. People can kind of get a 360 view of what the Puppy Bowl looks like. It's really, technologically, they've really made some great advances. So now, there's options.
Do we have chickens there this year for cheerleaders and stuff? What do we have there?
Yes. Yes, I think you've done your research. Yes, every year we mix up our cheerleaders. You know, we've had pigs. You know, we've had hedgehogs. This year we have silky chickens. Silky chickens are from China. They're different from your typical American chicken. They actually do have like a very soft coat, and they're, you know, they used to be kept as pets. These are adopted. They already have a loving home. But they're five silky chickens, really interesting looking birds, and they are cheering them on from the sidelines. That's not the only animal we have. In addition to the, you know, the cats and the chickens, we also have hamsters that are doing our sort of air, our blimp cam. We have Meep, which is a cockatiel, the bird that's tweeting out all different game updates. And this year, for the first year ever, I have a referee assistant, and that's Stanley the skunk. And yes, it is a skunk. And yes, it is a referee. And we'll see how it goes. I mean, you know, it's a whole new thing for me.
Now, is this the first time you've had an assistant, Stanley the skunk?
Yeah. Yeah, I have to tell you, when they said I was getting one, I was relieved to hear that it was an animal, not a human. So I wasn't as threatened. But Stanley's got some opinions, and let me tell you, if he doesn't agree with you, he has a very distinctive way of telling you he disagrees and doesn't like you. So he's very persuasive, let's say, due to his natural abilities.
I'm just loving this. You know that, Dan. I'm just loving this whole thing. I really am.
Me too.
Because I just love the whole thing. And, you know, for people who don't like cats, and they have the big kitty thing that's going on at halftime.
Yeah, you know, it's Kittens at Halftime show this year because the big game is in the Bay Area, San Francisco. We're doing a San Francisco-themed halftime show. So it's kittens, you know, with a whole cool San Fran backdrop, and they're just playing around for about 20 minutes dancing. It's a lot of fun. A lot of new elements this year. We also, if I may, highlight kind of an important thing that I've been pushing for many years, which is the importance of adopting senior dogs. Often it's really easy to adopt, you know, puppies, right? They tend to go quickly. They're cute. They're adorable. People want puppies. But it's the senior, the older dogs that tend to languish in these shelters and often, sadly, get put to sleep. So we're devoting a very significant time, portion of Puppy Bowl this year, to bringing out, it's kind of cool, we brought out past Puppy Bowl MVPs, who are now, of course, adults, some of them seniors. And we're using them as a chance to highlight how important it is to adopt or consider adopting an adult dog. So just to kind of shed some light on that aspect, it's important for people to think about that too.
My last dog was a Cavalier that was 11 years old when I first got her.
Oh, see, there you go.
Yes.
You're already house trained, right?
Oh, absolutely.
They're socialized. They're grateful to be in a home. You know, they can be calm if you've got young kids, or if it's an elderly person, they're wonderful for both young and old because they've got a calm demeanor. They've sort of been through it all, and they can really be a great addition to people's homes. We always encourage that. And so this year we're trying to not, we're saying, hey, yeah, it's easy to adopt puppies. Let's take it a step further and see if we can really decrease the amount of animals that are euthanized every year, because that's a big mission for Animal Planet.
Dan, let me ask you something. With the people that are there, and what about the MVPs and the people that are there? I mean, can you see what it's going to be like? Can you, because you have like a Great Dane plus little dogs, so you have different sized dogs, so you have different ones, right?
Yeah, so there's 80 dogs altogether, but what we do is for each of the four quarters, we bring in a different sort of grouping in terms of size. So the beginning of the game starts with little dogs, the toy dogs, the chihuahuas, the shih tzus, and then second quarter we get slightly bigger dogs, maybe beagles, terriers. Third period, we're getting into shepherds. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth period is when we get into the old English sheepdogs and the Great Danes and things like that. So we make sure that even though they're babies and they're all puppies, they are, of course, varying sizes, but we make sure they're sort of fairly matched so that you don't have a Great Dane jumping on top of a little dachshund and scaring him off into the sideline. So we try to keep it fair.
I think I love the puppy bowl. That's more than anything else. When they go to drink the water, that's it for me. I go off the deep end on that.
Me too. You know, we have a penalty that I call a lot of penalties, as you can imagine. But one is if they stay in the water bowl too long, it's called illegal bathing, because often that's what happens. Some dogs love that bowl so much they just decide to hang out in it. And I'll throw the flag down and I will set them back 5 yards and I'll tell them, come on, repeat first down. Let's get serious. Head in the game.
Because they get hung up. You're right. They get hung up in the bathing for all that. Dan, how long have you been doing this? Obviously doing the referee, but what do you do? Because I know you're doing the Meredith Vieira thing. I saw that. But you've done, for people who don't know, he did Celebrity Deathmatch and stuff like that that we used to listen to. So you've done a lot of this.
I've done a lot of voiceover work, a lot of some animation work, like you said, Celebrity Deathmatch, a lot of announcer work. You know, I've worked from both Meredith Vieira, for the Steve Harvey Show, for the Tyra Banks Show, which is called The Fab Life, a lot of like daytime talk show announcing, which I really enjoy because it allows me to still communicate with the audience, usually not about puppies, more about pop culture, but I'm getting the word out there for different things that I'm interested in. And the Puppy Bowl, I've got to say, is my one chance to do this on camera, and I have to say it's a labor of love. I mean, of course I'm paid, but it doesn't matter. I would do this job for free. It's something that I've worked for Animal Planet for years, but always kind of wanted this job. So when the opening came up about 5 years ago, I jumped on it, sent them a crazy audition tape of me officiating dogs in the park, and they said, all right, you're crazy enough. Come on, let's do it. You're the one. And I'm hoping to have this one. I'm hoping this one goes on the gravestone. You know, one day when it's all over, yes. I hope this is the first line of my obituary, because it's the job that I'm proudest of. We really are doing great stuff, and every year it just gets bigger.
Ref of the Puppy Bowl is what we'll do on that. You know what? I have Meet the Bird on my Twitter too. On Meet the Bird is on my Twitter. I mean, like, I don't know. Does anyone else know about it? I do.
Oh, I do. Yeah, you follow him. MeetTheBird.com. I think thousands of followers, perhaps more at this point. I haven't checked, but I know Meet has more Twitter followers than I do. So that tells you something. It's still Animal Planet. The focus is still on animals, so we like that.
Now, the thing that we're doing this year, Bruce Smith is going to be there. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that was the senior dog segment that I was alluding to earlier. You know, Bruce Smith is a Hall of Fame defensive player for the Bills, and he's come out, and he and I are teamed up to just do this entire segment devoted to adopting senior dogs and adult dogs. We talk about the benefits. We talk about how helpful they would be for a household, especially if you've got young kids, how they're often socialized, how they're often very happy to be there, you know. How difficult sometimes puppies can be, you know, in terms of housebreaking and how much time and energy and how much less time and energy you might need to devote to an adult dog. And at the same time, Bruce Smith helps read the list of past Hall of Fame MVPs from past Puppy Bowls that come on into the field and they parade, and we get to see them for a moment. And it's kind of cool because we have a lot of old favorites coming back from past years, and that's really exciting to see the former puppy players who were heroes come back as adult dogs, still, of course, with loving homes. So it's great.
All right. Tell us exactly when it's on Sunday, on February the 7th. Tell everybody, and that it's on forever.
Yeah, it sure is on forever. I mean, Animal Planet's got it going. It's starting at 3:00 Eastern. on animalplanet.com. You can check out the pregame beforehand. Oh, I should also mention there's fantasy puppy bowl. So for the fantasy fanatics out there who like playing fantasy sports, there is a fantasy puppy bowl. You can create your own team and play it against your friends and really see how your team does online. So you can track it online. The show itself is on Animal Planet starting at 3 o'clock. It runs every 2 hours with, as I said, a new show with a new ending for about the next 12 hours. So if you miss it once, don't worry. And if during the big game you're a little bored and you want to see what's going on the other big game, we'll be there waiting for you.
I love Dan. Don't you love it? And don't you want to see the Puppy Bowl? It's at 3 o'clock. Don't miss it on the Animal Planet. You got nothing else to do. Don't be watching 17 hours of football. It's going to make you crazy the whole time. What else is going on around here? It's football season, isn't it? It's the end of football season. That's what freaks me out. But you know what? Okay. My guys lost. It was terrible. Why they didn't kick the field goal, I will never know. But I'm not going there with those stupid Patriots at all. All right, everybody wants Peyton to do well, Denver to do well. I got to tell you something. I think Charlotte's going to kill them. I don't think this is 13-10. I think they're just going to kill them. I mean, they just, the way they handled Seattle, that's the thing that freaked me out when it was 31-0. It was in the first half. So that's kind of what, I'm afraid it's going to be that kind of thing. And I hope, like, you'll be watching a lot of Puppy Bowl in the middle of that. We'll have to see it. We will talk about that. And we have a million things coming up. It's called the Super Bowl Super Week. And it's all with the Babe Cast. Can I say Super Bowl Super Week? Is that what I'm supposed to say with the Babe Cast? Listen, Leslie's going to join us. Leslie Visser will be here. Pat Jesenkis is going to be here. We're going to do a whole lot about Charlotte. Back in the day, Charlotte. We'll talk to people in Denver, people in Charlotte, and anyone else that wants to deal with me. I'm here, and I will talk to you. After all, it's called the Super Bowl what? The Super Bowl Super Week with me at the Babe Cast. Oh, I'm liking myself all the time right now.
If you know the Babe at all, you know this show never ends. Don't believe me, just watch. Follow her on Twitter at RealSportsBabe and subscribe to the show on iTunes. This is the Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Info.